Welcome to the Reformed Media Review. My name is Camden Busey. I'm here with a special episode. We're delighted to welcome to the program today Pamela York. She's a jazz pianist. She has a new album out titled Lay Down This World, Hymns and Spirituals, a very fantastic album we're going to speak about today. Welcome to the program, Pamela. It's great to have you.
Thank you.
We spoke with Pamela a few years ago on previous albums. She has an album called Blue York and some other projects, and it's just fantastic stuff. But if I'm correct, this is your first that's a set of hymns and spirituals. Is that right?
It is. I included a couple on previous recordings, and I got such a positive response that, and I've been playing these hymns for quite some time now, so it became more and more obvious over the last few years that I needed to do an entire project devoted to the hymns.
Yeah. Well, I was excited to hear about this, and thank you, for sending in a copy out, and it's been fantastic to listen to. We have a number of different hymns on here that people are going to be familiar with. The first track is A Mighty Fortress Is Our God. Could you speak a little bit about your choice in selecting that song, but also your arrangement? It's quite a different take on the hymn than other people are going to be familiar with.
Yeah, it is quite different from how you would sing it in a congregational setting. Well, one thing that goes along with all of the hymns, but maybe in particular, A Mighty Fortress, is, taking the melody, and I was faithful to the melodies on the recording. Even if you're not familiar with jazz, you'll definitely recognize the hymns that you're familiar with. But taking the melody, finding a way to arrange it so that a trio could play it, my trio could play it. Mm-hmm. With chord changes that were in a jazz vocabulary. And so I started playing A Mighty Fortress, but it became apparent to me that it would work a little better for my purposes if it was a 3 meter mm-hmm. instead of just a 4/4 time. It gives it a forward motion that really works with having percussion.
Yeah.
On the track.
So. All right, I must. And who are the gentlemen in your trio? Because I've seen the video, yeah. and they're fantastic. Your bassist and the percussionist. What are their names?
Yeah, the bass player is Lynn Seaton, and he's a fantastic improviser, mm-hmm. Technician on the bass, and is a professor at the University of North Texas at Denton. And Sebastian Whitaker plays drums, and he is a local drummer here in Houston, also teaches at Houston Community College.
Well, I think they lay a wonderful foundation and, from which you can do some really creative things. Without that backbone, I don't know how well it would hold together. It'd still be interesting, but I think mm-hmm. the trio setting really makes for an enjoyable experience.
Yeah, I think that if I were to have a solo piano recording, that would work well. It would just be different, a more quiet and reflective kind of mood than as you add the more instruments and more excitement, more chemistry mm-hmm. happens. So yeah, it's definitely exciting to have the collaboration with those two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even delving into some, as you alluded to, some bass improvisation and some runs that you afford him, it's really fantastic to hear, and something you don't always expect when you're listening to hymns and spiritual songs.
Thank you.
tell me a little about some of these other selections and some of your favorite pieces in terms of how they turned out. Which tracks were you most satisfied with?
Well, I really enjoy I Know That My Redeemer Lives, yeah. Glory Hallelujah. Had been singing this actually in our church for a short while. We usually have a hymn of the month at Providence Presbyterian, and we practice it for that month, and we've chosen that one. And I was sitting there one day, and it actually in church, and it came to me that it would sound really interesting if I changed the groove. And we tried it, and we ended up doing a reggae-type feel on it. I've been pretty influenced by the Jamaican pianist Monty Alexander, and so I draw inspiration from him, and that was a really exciting track for me. Another one that I enjoy playing is Just a Closer Walk with the... Mm-hmm. And, of course, the addition of Andre Hayward on trombone on a couple of tracks gave that one... not really a Dixieland feel, although it's coming from that tradition, but we did it as a calypso, and it was a lot of fun. It just makes me smile when I hear that one.
Yeah, it's fun to hear these and these new renditions, and I think they're done well. One thing I noticed, I listened to a lot of Keith Jarrett and Brad Meldow and mm-hmm. figures like that, some Diana Krall here and there. I know you've had some experience with her, but... Mm-hmm. Can you describe a little bit about your influences and the particular, especially I'm interested in the chord voicings, because what you use sound more modern as opposed to what you might get with some of the players maybe 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah, I'm definitely drawing from their tradition, my jazz piano tradition. I've studied the recordings of Wynton Kelly and Oscar Peterson, Herbie Hancock, Chick Corea. And so, you know, I feel like my vocabulary is coming from that tradition. Mm-hmm. But yeah, in terms of putting those kinds of voicings and making them work with the hymns and the spirituals, what you find is that, you know, where maybe the original composer had a just a regular 5 chord, I might play a 5-7 mm-hmm. with a flat 9 or a sharp 9. And I apologize to the non-musicians out there who...
We never apologize on anything Reform Forum for getting too technical. So this is a good... Usually the theological people, we get too technical. And so now this is a taste of their own medicine. So now the music people can rejoice and the theological people will be struggling.
So. So where it worked with the melody, I was able to slip in some extra colors and spices to the chords,
sure.
and still make it work. And I like I said before, I really wanted to be true to the melody, and I do in everything I do. I think what the composer wrote, be it Cole Porter or George Gershwin or Martin Luther, I think, you know, there's if it's a good melody, it'll stand the test of time and be able to work regardless of instrumentation and reharmonization. So I had a lot of fun doing that.
Yeah, I think that's really the greatest honor or the true test, I think, of a composer's or songwriter's ability. You think of somebody like Bob Dylan and how many different ways his songs get used. Mm-hmm. But I think it testifies to the just the solid foundation upon which, well, the solid foundation that he built and upon which other people build. And so it's great to see how you're taking these different songs and these classics and demonstrating through creativity how solid they actually are.
Mm-hmm.
That's really exciting. I think there are a lot of parallels. The last time we spoke with you, we did kind of make some connections with theology, and I think there's some interesting things there to talk about in terms of creativity, influences, tradition. Could you elaborate more on your views on how you apply something such as improvisation to some of these standard songs? How do you balance creativity and faithfulness, or do you see them being competitive, or do you see them being complementary? I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, definitely complementary. I don't feel like where we improvise that it takes away from the song. Most of the time, we're improvising on the same structure. Occasionally, I'll add interlude or, you know, a little bit of a different, an introduction or an ending. But in terms of the actual structure of a song, be it 16 measures or 20 measures, we stuck pretty close to that, you know, the original versions.
Right.
And sometimes we would improvise on a melody. Sometimes we would take a solo over the whole entire chord progression. And it's interesting, too, because I thought, well, maybe I should write a couple of original compositions to include. But as time went by, there were so many hymns to choose from and so many that needed to be cut, left out just in terms of time, that I really wanted to stick to the older ones. Mm-hmm. And I think where we improvised and took solos, it complements the melody and the original structure of the song.
Yeah, I think initially when you think about improvisation and creativity and these sorts of things, people don't understand, or it doesn't seem intuitive to think about how structure and constraints can actually create the opportunity for creativity. I'm thinking specifically in theology, people generally think of you know, OP, PCA guys, they're confessional, that are subscribing to standards as constraining. They think that they will limit creativity and limit originality. Whereas when you have a set structure to work with and you subscribe to that, it provides the structure in many ways, as a song provides the chord changes and the melody, those sorts of things. But beyond that, you can now build and you can do new things. But if you did not have that structure, it would be difficult to be creative unless you went in a totally like free jazz realm.
Yeah.
And then there's no structure at all.
That's right. And I agree. You can reference the melody, and you can, even when you're improvising, you're still very much following the flow of the chord progressions.
Right.
And that's exciting. It might be different for someone who hears this music or any jazz music for the first time to get used to that, because you definitely have the melody stated and different instruments take their turn and spontaneously compose or improvise mm-hmm. over this structure. But it is a structure, and you know, part of the jazz tradition is doing your homework and knowing those standards and what makes them great, and learning some of the chord progressions, seeing the patterns that emerge from the popular song.
Right.
And that becomes a part of you.
It does. You have to have that vocabulary. That's the word you mentioned before, and I think that's so correct, in order to be able to play with others, so to speak. You have to have this common corpus, this common body of knowledge to work with. That's why the fake book is so popular, right?
yeah. And I think, you know, it goes, whether we're talking about theological traditions or, you know, literature, poetry, it's, you can't expect to, you know, in some senses you can, they stand on their own, but the more you know about it and the more you know about structure and the more you listen, it further enriches your enjoyment of what comes next.
Yeah.
And it's exciting over time to, you know, experience that as a, person who's growing and in their knowledge of a particular subject.
It is. Let's talk a little bit about music in the church. I know you play here and there. I don't know how frequently you play, if you accompany in worship very often, but what have you found in terms of the usefulness, or maybe the acceptability is a better word, of jazz in you know, more traditional setting like the PCA or the OPC, which typically worship is very simple. Have you found a place for jazz? Has it been something you've been able to incorporate?
I would say that if I'm, and I do accompany most Sundays, I usually take the fourth Sunday off the month. I tend to be on the more conservative side when accompanying. I do add some extra notes, or in the bass, or some passing notes when I'm playing a hymn for a congregation to sing. I do tend to play some of my own arrangements during an offering or a prelude.
You have more flexibility there.
Yeah, there's a little more freedom. You're not supporting any singing. So that's where I tend to see my arrangements as a jazz musician fit in. And I feel, though, that singing in general could be greatly improved in church today. I know that in the 1800s, they used to have these singing schools in New England and earlier, and people would actually meet and be taught how to sing hymns. And I think it wouldn't be a bad idea to do that. And not if the singer-writer, I would put in more, jazz chords or anything like that. But I do see the need to play clearly and, precisely, and really assist the singing. And I feel like, you know, unless there's a really experienced group, I tend to keep it on the simple side.
Yeah, and I think that's appropriate, but it's still nice to, if you have an offertory or a prelude or something, and the opportunity to use your gifts in an excellent way, I think that there's a place for that. It's at least something to talk about. It's an interesting opportunity. So this album, again, the title, Lay Down This World, Hymns and Spirituals, is available in a number of different places. You can find it on iTunes. You can find it on Amazon. You can also visit Pamela on her website at PamelaYork.com. And Pamela, how can people get a copy of the physical CD? Can they get it through Amazon, or is it through CD Baby?
CDBaby.com. I don't think I will be putting the physical CD on Amazon. The MP3 downloads are there. Okay. And of course, at live performances too.
Oh, yes, of course. Now, are you playing any gigs? Do you have anything scheduled in the near future?
Yeah, I've got some that are posted on my website at the moment. Let's see. I've been playing in Houston, of course, and Austin. I'm doing a house concert in Austin in December. And I've got some things coming up in January, including a concert in Memphis.
Oh, wow. So you're going up to Tennessee.
Yeah.
Great. Well, and should also mention, Pamela's involved with Providence OPC Church in Kingwood, Texas, and her husband is Adam York, is a minister there at that church. So if you're in the area, it'd be a great opportunity to come and to worship with people there in Houston.
Absolutely. We'd love to have any visitors or anyone in Houston contact us, and please say you listen to the Reform Forum and let us know that you heard about us.
Great. Well, Pamela, thanks so much for joining me today. This is really great to speak with you.
Thank you, Camden.
If you can want more information about what we're up to, visit us online at reformedforum.org. This has been the Reformed Media Review.